Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is your host, Sharifa Hardy. I am here with you on Tuesday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I have an amazing, exciting show for you today. I've been speaking with our guests backstage, and the information we're going to share today, I really believe is going to blow you away. I enjoy learning about it, learning about some of their stories, and I'm pretty sure you will as well. So before we get started with today's show, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show, because we share so much information. We take notes, we learn, we laugh, we cry, and we don't want your friends mad at you. That's why we want you to go out and to be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. And friends, don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I want to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And I know we're going to learn from him. He is calling in all the way from London, Mr. Michael Bryan. He is a speaker. He's an author. He's an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur. So we're going to find out a little bit more about him and his journey. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, doing really well. I'm excited.
Why are you so excited to be here today?
I love the fact that even though the world is changing, that we can still come together virtually. So, yeah, I'm excited to chat and dive in again.
And sometimes I just come up with random questions just to see what people are going to respond with. That's not a typical question, but hey, it's a good answer. So you're an author, you're a speaker, and I know one of the industries that was affected the most is the speaking industry. You have so many people who are used to being on a plane, they're used to being in front of large audiences, and then they're stuck at home. What was the experience, what has the experience over the last few months been like for you, Mike?
Well, most of it's been virtual for me anyway, because it's how I tend to, I quite like the online environment from when I first started. So I took my business online initially. That was the initial move. And I was seeing how the world was going. You know, I was a personal trainer and technology was taking over with the virtual classes. And I just thought, this is going to keep going. This isn't going to slow down. So I decided to take things online, and I've not looked back ever since. It's the easiest way to touch the most number of people. So I did that many years ago now, and I think I'm just going to stick with it. I think offline events are going to be difficult to run, especially when some of the biggest speakers in the world are going virtual. It's kind of like, well, if they're doing it, there's a pretty good reason why I should, you know? So, yeah, it's the way the world's going now.
No, I definitely agree, because one of the things I talk about often is with the Roundtable Talk Show. I came up with this idea after my run for Long Beach City Council, and I realized that I still wanted to have a voice, and I still wanted to have a platform, and that making a difference and a change in our world is not just one person's responsibility. It's not just up to the president or to the mayor or the governor or even the city council people. It's all of our responsibility, and change starts with the conversation. So I wanted to sit down with people and have these conversations, but if it had not been for COVID, I would never, and I know this to be true, I'm so grateful, despite everything that happened, to be able to have 5 guests per day who sit down with me. Before COVID, so many people were novices. They had no idea about Zoom. They were like, I'm not going to talk to you on a computer. All of a sudden, everyone is on a computer. And so that's why I had the honor to sit down with so many people. Now, you said you've been doing this for years. You knew it was the way to go. I built my first website in 1994. I don't know why, no how. I was ahead of my time. But what made you so sure that this was the way to go for your business years before everyone else?
I think as soon as I realized that people shared a lot on social media, like when it was like MySpace and Twitter, I mean, no one remembers MySpace once you hit a certain age, but that was the first thing for me. Now I'm a self-proclaimed introvert, so I never really shared much when it was MySpace. I was still new to the whole putting myself out there sort of game. But as soon as I saw that and people were posting and it was happening so quickly, I just sort of thought, well, everyone's jumping on board with this. Everyone's sharing pictures of their food or their kids or whatever it is that they're up to. And I just thought, well, this isn't slowing down because everyone's doing it. It was like not it wasn't a quiet thing. Everyone was on it. So I just thought, well, okay, I'll sort of jump on the train, so to speak. And we're talking over 3 to 4, like maybe 5 years ago now. And that's when it wasn't necessarily websites for me, but it was when social media started. We spend more time online now than we do offline. So once I sort of realized that, it was kind of like, okay, let's get involved. And I've not looked back ever since.
Absolutely. One of the data, the statistics that I saw said that prior to COVID, the average person spent 2 hours on Facebook. During COVID, they spent 8 hours on social media. You know,
Wow.
so now it's like it's their day job. That's what they do for 8 hours, spend
Either
that time.
that or you're losing sleep.
Yes, absolutely. I want to come back to you, Michael, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, mainly because he joined the conversation, and I want to let everyone know who we're speaking to, Mr. Tommy McCoy, and he is the co-founder of Paul Share, a new wave of junk removal service. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm well. How are you?
I'm excited to be here. Haul Share. Tell us a little bit about Haul Share and how you came up with Haul Share.
HaulShare is it's an online marketplace where we connect customers that need junk removal services, furniture removal services, appliance removal services with local haulers. I hate saying this, but this is the quickest thing that comes to people's mind. It's kind of like Uber for junk removal. How it came about, I was working, well, I actually, to kind of bring this all kind of full circle, I went to school to be a doctor. I had no desire to be in small business because my parents, I saw what they went through growing up. It afforded me a wonderful childhood and a fantastic upbringing. But it was obviously littered with ups and downs, you know, just by running a small business. So I saw them struggle in ways that I didn't want to struggle. I also worked in their business, and after I graduated college, I also played football. So I didn't have the GPA that I wanted to have getting into med school. I was competitive, just I didn't get into the schools that I really wanted to attend. So the best thing to do kind of is just come home, prepare for the MCAT, and just work for my parents and make money. And I fell in love with it. I loved working with my parents. I started innovating and finding efficiencies in the business model that allowed us to extract more value from our customers, and then which kind of led to just providing a better product for our customers. And I would take calls and calls. I literally worked every single possible job, working on the back of trucks, driving trucks, answering phone calls. Now more of a key business decision, business role where I'm in now. But while I was taking hundreds of calls every day, we would have, you know, every maybe one out of every four calls, someone would call in and say, "Hey, is there any way that you guys could streamline or make this bulk removal service faster?" Because the service that we offered through my parents' company would take 2 to 3 days to schedule out to then have our truck come and pick it up. And the service was it was clanky, it was expensive, it took forever. So I decided, I was like, "Hey, you know, if I could, you know, maybe speed this process up a little bit, maybe customers don't have to call in. Maybe they could just have an online order form where they can, you know, tell us what they have. And I asked enough people, I said, hey, you know, if I do this, would you guys be willing to work with me on it? And enough people said, yeah. So that gave me the confidence to kind of move forward. I met my co-founder, who I literally would not be on this conversation with you guys today without him. And we were able to collaborate and build an MVP that we still kind of use today. That has made us hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is still really clanky, but it works. So we launched that day one. We had a customer, and it's just been kind of growing and growing and growing since then. Now we kind of work all throughout the DC metropolitan area, which is in DC, Maryland, Virginia. So that's kind of how it came about. And yeah, that's kind of the short story.
I like short stories. I like your story. Yeah. And I love the fact that you just saw a problem. And yeah, each time you wanted to figure out a way to come up with a solution for that problem. That's what entrepreneurs are. True entrepreneurs see a problem and they're solution oriented. And it's so interesting. And I can kind of see that in you. It's like, there's like this little nagging feeling, like it irritates you to the, you know, not most people can walk away from something, but when you see something that's taking too much time, it's too much. You're like, you know what? I got to streamline this process. I have to make it easier. And it just seems like that's the approach that you took with.
Yeah, I really did. And it's akin to a lot of, like you mentioned, entrepreneurs kind of identifying a problem and doing what they can to fix it. So that's really honestly what it was. It truly was kind of a, you know, just talking to our customers. And that's what I think a lot of people miss out on, is they're afraid to talk to customers because they don't want to hear anything bad. But I think, you know, serving your customers and always talking to them. And I had no choice because I was answering phone calls all day, right? So just talking to them and just having a normal conversation about their needs and what they would prefer will get you so far. And it really did. I probably had, I mean, I still do. I look at some of the stuff that I built out. And I had thousands of people in a spreadsheet that said, yes, you know, I would use it, or how much I would spend using it, you know, like what my margins would be. So I did all of that before spending a dime. Mm-hmm. And I had all those resources to then kind of pitch my co-founder, because he was, you know, when you're trying to convince someone to be a business partner, they're trying to, in their mind, trying to think, okay, is this thing going to really work? Right. Mm-hmm. But because I had done so much research and I had domain expertise, my parents are kind of leveraging their business relationships so that we can jump in and immediately have customers. It really was a safe bet. And I think all great entrepreneurs, they don't really take huge risks. I think they take calculated bets that allow them to say, you know what, if I mitigate enough risks, I think this would be a positive outcome down the road at some point. And then they just keep at it. So that's kind of what we mean.
I like that. So explain to me, is this your service for residential? Is it commercial? How does it work?
So it's split. It's about 80% commercial B2B clients. So we work with property management firms, apartment complexes, community associations, and things like that. And the rest, I would say 20-25% are just single family home customers, townhouse customers, residential clients.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Tommy, I want to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Kurt Sather. He is one of the co-founders of Show Me Television. Good morning, Kurt. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me this morning.
Absolutely. You're here in LA with me, so we're up early getting ready for the day.
Yeah, it's been during COVID, I feel like my mornings have gotten later and later, but yeah, I mean, 7:30, 7 a.m. I'm up and at 'em in the morning, trying to early bird gets the worm type of thing.
I'm the same way. I'm up early in the morning getting prepared for the show, reading up on my guests. And one of the things that I find interesting, I mentioned with Michael, speakers were affected, but also the entertainment industry was basically shut down. Well, I'm trying to remove that word basically, but it was shut down. And so you had so many creatives who were looking for other ways to basically survive or to continue their business. So talk to us about Show Me Television. Let's talk a little bit about the company as well as how this whole experience has affected you, your company.
Yeah, of course. So me and my two other founders, we started this project as like just a kind of a side project about 2 years ago. So one of the founders is, he's an actor content. He's like our content specialist, Andre Boyer. And then my other founder is a developer. And we kind of all came together because we each have like a specific role that we stick to. I'm more on the biz dev side, you know, Dre's on the content side, my developer, of course, to manage our beautiful apps. After a couple of years, you know, and especially during COVID, audiences are definitely at home watching TV. We've seen like a 50% growth just normal daily traffic of just viewership. But on the flip side of the coin, we primarily make all of our money on ad revenue. So during COVID, everybody's locked indoors. The consumer, the normal consumer, isn't out spending frivolously. And we really saw that on the advertiser side where, you know, nobody's marketing towards an audience that's not spending money. So, you know, ad spend has been pretty low. We are fortunate to be on in-home TV screens. So when there are advertisers that want to spend, that's where they're marketing. So it's been really interesting. You know, we're marketing towards an audience to grow our audience, but at the same time, we don't necessarily see the immediate return on investment. Which, you know, it sucks.
Not always immediate, though. It's not always immediate. Sometimes it takes time. I've been doing this for over 25 mm-hmm. years, so I understand. But mm-hmm. when it actually happens, it's a beautiful thing. So if we were to go to Show Me Television, what can we expect?
You can expect a lot of things. How we came about with our first app is we have, you know, 500 or 600 titles. All ranging from food to fitness to, you know, we have some animated stuff for the kids. We have some faith and spiritual forward content. It's just content for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, we just want to offer the audience something that they're interested in. I'm a full diehard streamer myself. And I'll surf around 5, 6, 7 apps looking for that one title that I want to watch. And that's kind of how we came about is, you know, now we manage about 80 apps altogether, just with every content from esports, you know, to we have an Italian bakery app. And it's just offering the audience something they want to watch.
When you say apps, and you said you have roughly 80 apps. So how does that work? Are they just, okay, how does that work within yours?
Okay, so technically we manage 12 apps ourselves. These are apps that we built, launched, and we manage. And then me coming from the advertiser industry, I've, you know, collaborated with enough publishers to where we manage another 65 to 70 apps just through other publishers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it comes into play. And when I say apps, technically in the CTV space, they're called channels.
That was my next question. I'm like, okay, so we're talking channels.
Yeah.
You were wondering the same thing?
Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, realistically, it's just like an app. It's just on a TV screen, so different environment. They just call it channel. But
okay, so where can we watch Show Me Television?
You can watch us on Roku currently, and then we're expanding out onto Apple TV and Fire TV, and then hopefully by the end of the year we will be on Samsung and Vizio. We're kind of still in beginning talks with those companies about getting on their platform.
So. I like that. I like the expansion. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come back to you, Kurt. I want to go over to you real quick, Michael. Now, you are a serial entrepreneur, someone who has been an entrepreneur for some time. One of the things I discuss with entrepreneurs is that I pretty much see that it's a calling where they make a decision to be an entrepreneur, a self-employed, work for themselves, and then all of a sudden something happens and they go back to the corporate world or getting a job and they go back and forth. That's a tendency that I see. Was that your experience or were you just always an entrepreneur?
There was a combination of things that tend to happen when I was about maybe 15 or 16. So I'm only 29. I was recently 29. So when I was about 15 or 16, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had absolutely no clue. There was no, like, oh, you could get a job in this, you can get a job in that. When your parents don't really push you into something because you've got health conditions and everyone's sort of like, we'll just let him do what he wants to do, you know, because it's hard. You know, you're forcing a kid that might not be around when he's 60 to do what he wants to do with the rest of his life. So my parents didn't do that. So that I was basically going off desire the whole time. What do I want to do? And when I stopped being given like what to learn as well. Like, it's funny when you're told what to learn in school, you forget how to make your own decisions. Cause you never have to. You're told what to learn, told what to memorize, told, I'm just like, this is driving me insane. This is I wasn't very good. So it was like, memorize this. I've got a bad memory. This isn't gonna work. So eventually I did like the bare minimum in terms of I got through. You know, the system pushes you through, right? But then as soon as I was allowed to control what I did, or I was allowed to have a say, and like teachers were like, no, do this instead. It was like me or my parents. And my parents were like, look, you've got to want to do it, otherwise you're going to hate it. And that was the last thing they wanted, was for me to hate it, considering like, I'm probably not going to have like retire at 75 and then live on a yacht somewhere. That probably wasn't going to be in my plan. And I think deep down, my parents knew that. So the only thing I was ever really keen on was sport. It was amazing for my health. It was like, the difference between me being the same as everybody else health-wise and me being in hospital. So it was the only thing I ever did. It was football, wasn't very good. It was basketball. I played for all the school teams. It was tennis. I became a tennis coach because of that. It was, you've just got to want to do it. That was the only thing that was driving me at the time because I had no other choice. Mm-hmm. Really motivated by like, I wasn't motivated by like telling people that told me I wasn't good enough to prove them wrong. That wasn't my motivation. It was like, do it because you want to do it because you never know, right? It was kind of like it was a no regrets kind of thing, which meant it was weird because I was matching, people were asking me what I wanted to do, and then I would say no to a few things, I would say yes to a few things. I realized I hated being an employee. You know, when you were like a student and you get a Saturday job, and I hated it, and I was only there one day a week. And I was
a Saturday job, just one day. But I wanted to mention though, what one of the things that I didn't mention earlier is that as a child, you were diagnosed with cystic fibrosis and diabetes, and you weren't expected. That's one of the reasons you keep referring to old age and 60 and 75. You weren't expected to live a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I had a, I was very weird in that I was very curious, which bit me on my ass a few times. Mm-hmm. So when I was 16 and it was like, well, you can't have kids. I was like, let's see what else is like predicted, you know, what else is like driving me insane. And and I know it's not, like, and it's not a very positive subject, but it was like, okay, well, mortality rate is like 45 with the new, and I'm just like, oh, great. And then when I was diagnosed with diabetes, when it was, I was like initial 20s, I stupidly, right, very stupidly did the same thing. It's like, I want to know. Like, it's driving me insane and not knowing. So when I did that and it was like, oh, now it's 25. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm 29. So great. Right. It was kind of, it's a weird sensation when you're on borrowed time for what that can do for your life, for what that can do for your decisions, which meant that I grew quite stubborn. If I'm being brutally honest, it was, I don't want to do this. Therefore, very little you can say that will change my mind.
Yes. And now you spend your time helping other entrepreneurs believe in their dreams and achieve their goals. I think that's remarkable. I want to come back to you, Michael, but I want to go over to Kirk. We heard Michael's incredible story. We heard Tommy talk about his family and how he got started in his business. Kurt, one of the things that I talk about is, you know, I've been an entrepreneur, but my dad has been an entrepreneur my entire life. He's had his own plumbing business in California since 1985. Whereas my mother, you know, she works for one of the largest corporations there is, been at her job 20 plus years, corporate entrepreneur. Has it been like for you? What is your experience growing up? Was it more corporate, more entrepreneur?
So interesting story. My grandfather, he's, you know, 80, I think he turns 84 this year. He's been an entrepreneur my entire life and, been very fortunate to where he's passed that down to everybody else in our family. So our grandfather is all the way at the top and he has helped, my cousin, my father, my brother, my uncle, two uncles, you know, he's just been the number one, promoter of our family companies, family businesses. And, I mean, I've been an entrepreneur, you know, since I was 17, 18. And, you know, I'm 32 now. So, just growing up with the mindset of like, you know, innovate, you know, do something more, you know, just don't be complacent. Not to say like, you know, working for a big company or corporation like that's being complacent. Sometimes progress gets hindered with larger companies, you know, more avenues, you know, specific chain of command. I find that, you know, with startups and with smaller companies, you get a lot more done and you can definitely innovate where you see fit. So
I like that. Your grandfather has helped everyone. I don't know.
Everyone in my family. Yeah.
I want to be adopted. I want to be a part of the family as well. I'm like, I want to learn all this entrepreneur. Because I don't, aside from my father, it's like no one else is an entrepreneur. My brother who's in Australia, he has a corporate day job. You know, he's like, I want that. I love that entrepreneurial energy. Tommy, you definitely have it. You grew up in an entrepreneur family as well.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I can relate to Kurt too, because my great-grandfather was an entrepreneur too. So, you know, it's kind of like a bee sting, right? It just sticks with you. And you kind of grow up thinking, you know, I'm not sure really what I'm going to do at some point, but I know I'm going to do it. So that was kind of always my mindset, even though I wanted to go to like med school and go down that route. I knew that I would always want to be in a position to work for myself or do something like that where I can kind of control my destiny. Really, I know that kind of sounds cliche, but I like also what Mike was saying, I really related to that because I've always been very curious. You know, I've always wanted to know like, why does this work? Or it got me in trouble a lot at church because I would always like question like the Bible and all this stuff.
Were you questioning it during church though? That's what I was.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up in a Southern Baptist like church, like I would always get like the side eye from my mom or like my grandmother, but I was always very curious, you know, just always wanted to know why things happened. why was it allowed to happen and how did it happen? And so I naturally always had this curiosity. So I knew at some point it would probably move me in that direction. So I can relate to what Kurt's saying.
Absolutely. That's what I talk about, though, is you usually find that joy as a child. And whatever it is that you find, it's usually something you wind up doing in some form or fashion. I was just like you, Tommy. I was that child that talked nonstop. I drove my mother crazy. She was like, "You do not stop talking," you know? And then I wasn't content just to talk. Why was my favorite what? Like, why? But why did this happen? And why did they say that? And why did they do that? And so, but now the whole thing, that's why I like to point it out, is now I'm a talk show host. I host 3 different talk shows and all I do is talk. So, and I talk about my cousin Carrie, who is to this day a news reporter in Columbus, Ohio, who's on ABC, CBS, NBC. I don't know, but it's one of the big ones. But I probably should know that. But the thing is, when Carrie was 9 years old,
I hope he's not watching.
Believe me, he's on ABC or CBS or NBC. He is not watching Sharifa Hardy, but I'm telling you, the whole point was when he was a kid, though, at 9, he would walk around the house with a spoon and interview everyone. And we'd be like, "What are you doing?" And, you know, but now he's on TV. So it's like that thing that we first kind of fell in love with. I always see it in entrepreneurs. Kurt, what were you doing at 17? What was your little hustle?
At 17, I was, you know, helping my father run his oil change business. And he had a car wash at the time too. And then he did, he had a lawn service as well. So pretty much, I didn't get any equity stake, but I was like a co-founder.
I hope your dad's watching.
He probably will. He supports me a lot, especially digitally. He's in his 50s, so social media isn't like his primary, pastime, I guess. But he still likes, supports, shares everything that he can. So it's really nice.
Did you end up mowing a lot of lawns?
Yes, I did.
I can imagine.
I actually had. I was a small car mechanic, in a previous life. And I wasn't even out of high school yet.
But, are you okay, Kurt? Is this therapy? You need to talk to us. Is there resentment in there, Kurt?
Oh, no. I love
Kurt was like, I need to go to high school, Dad. Dad was like, just one more oil change.
Looking back, it was... He paid me, but he didn't pay me very much.
Yeah. You got a lot of sweat equity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was fun, though. I learned a lot. It took a lot away from, following the chain of command. Me being the owner's kid, I didn't necessarily take that role, outside of, just like normal tasks, I didn't have a chip on my shoulder. It was just kind of, kept going, learned from it.
So that's so interesting to me. Usually what I find is when we go through those experiences, we either want to be an entrepreneur or we go, 100%, this is not for me. So what was it for you? Which way did you, I know what you're doing now, but what did you decide?
Well, choosing your own schedule, choosing your own, or I guess Tommy was touching on this, making your own decisions and, pushing companies forward, just as a self-starter. If you want to be an entrepreneur or you want to start a small business, you don't have anybody pushing you day to day. I mean, maybe clients, maybe partners, but at the end of the day, it's all yourself pushing, moving forward, changing, pivoting when you need to. And I learned that like really, really early that I tend to not exactly follow people's orders. I guess direction is one thing, but if someone's telling me to do something, I'm just like, wait, why do I do that? Mm-hmm. Why should I do that? Should I do it? You know, it's just, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get it. It's an entrepreneurial thing. We do it. Mine is not, it's the orders, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's being in charge of my schedule. That's where mm-hmm. I really have a problem, you know, because I may have something else that I want to do. And I'm so family oriented. If my family needs anything, my kids need anything, I don't care what's going on at work. I want to be able to stop that and go and do this. And so I love having the flexibility to do whatever I want to do. And I was just kind of interested in your experience because my father and I, I just took over as CEO of my father's plumbing company because he decided he wanted to retire. But my dad's the kind of guy that no matter what it is, if he sees a product or service that he likes, he wants to make a business out of it. Like when you were saying you did the oil change, that sounds like my dad. Like we were on the family, now we have a family reunion through Zoom every couple of weeks with our family awesome. Across the country. Yes, it's a lot of fun because I get to meet a lot of people I haven't met. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. My mom has 8 brothers and sisters. So it's a lot of
family. Midwest.
Yes. I was born in DC. I was telling Tommy that earlier, but we're on the call. We're talking to one of my aunts in Columbus. And my dad's like, you still make those pies? You make the best pies ever. And so she was like, yeah, I still make them. And he was like, we got to get them out there. I'm like, Dad, no, I'm not doing a pie business. Like, he always tries to wrap me into his little, I won't use the word schemes because he might be watching. But whatever it is. Like, is that how your family is, Tommy? Like, you have all these ideas together, I guess. Like, let's move.
100%. Yeah. I more often than not have to shoot down ideas. I can relate for sure.
How do you feel? Like, do you feel that there's any type of, I want to use the word regret, but I'm trying not to, but I'm going to use it just because, in not becoming a doctor as opposed to becoming an entrepreneur, because it seems to me you have an incredible bedside manner. You're someone that people would be like, oh my God, he's going to help me. Do you ever regret not going in that direction?
No, I don't. I have so much joy with, you know, working with my customers, working with my business partner, and working with my family that, I think I would regret if I didn't do that. Because it, just like Kurt also mentioned, it was probably very hard to do as a kid. But you know, when my parents pass on, when Kurt's parents pass on, at some point in time, right? We will look back at that time and be so thankful that we had the opportunity to work with them. Right. And that's such an invaluable experience for me. I don't think that I have any regrets. And I do down the road want to go back to school and potentially either teach at a university or go in through residency and through med school and become a doctor. But at this time, I'm young. I don't have any really, really real big commitments. I'm flexible with my time. So this is really the moment in my life that I could kind of do what I want, right? I don't have any children. I'm not married, anything like that. So I don't regret it.
I think that's beautiful. And kudos to your mom and your dad because they raised you right. You got that right mentality, that right attitude, that right spirit. I think that's wonderful.
But like you, I'm very, very family oriented. So it no brainer to me. It was an easy decision, yeah.
Yes. Michael, what are your thoughts thus far?
I think it's kind of the same thing with me. I guess when I kind of realized the benefits very early on, it was like, I don't want to lose this. This is something I want to stop. Because I started off being a volunteer. You know, it was like, you're young, you've not got the experience. Volunteer first, you know? So I started playing tennis was my first sort of sport that I wanted to eventually become a coach because the ask, you know, you're not so bad. You seem reasonably good with the kids. How do you feel about being the coach? And I just thought, I can play tennis all the time. Great, yeah. I mean, I'm not good enough for TV, but that's the next step, you know, next step away. So I was like, we'll give that a go. And you just get so caught up in the benefits of it all and the lifestyle of it all. And then, I mean, yeah, like, it's kind of unsociable hours, right? You kind of, you're working when you, the average person, if you will, average person, with a sort of a general 9 to 5, right, is like getting in, they're tired, and you're buzzing at like 8 o'clock at night because you've been hitting tennis balls for 3 hours with kids. And it's like you get home and you can't sleep because the adrenaline's still pumping and everyone else is like veg looking at the TV. Probably looking at your TV, Kurt, to be fair, your kind of stuff. But at that point, I'm like buzzing until like 9 at night, 10 at night. But I've not been working all day. I've only been working for 4 hours. So it's a weird lifestyle when you're reasonably quiet when everybody else is working. And then you're on the go, like it's a physical job. It's not like I'm sat at a computer. But at like 8 o'clock at night, you're hitting tennis balls, or you've got to be better than the person on the other end of the net. Otherwise, you can't really help them, or you can't keep up with them. So it was very, very exhilarating to the point where a normal job just wasn't going to cut it. You know, it just wasn't going to be enough. I was a reasonably hyper child, as I'm sure you could probably figure that out. So I need to do something. I can't sit down.
Did you go to book, Michael? Let's talk about your book. Tell us about your book.
Well, the book is about my journey, essentially. It's a cross between a memoir and lessons learned. So like things like being isolated and trying to enjoy my own company when I was in school, being bullied, being diagnosed with diabetes that caused me to really shift my life direction quite quickly. Because one of my friends actually passed away with the conditions before I was then diagnosed. So it was kind of like he passed away, I was then diagnosed. And in my head, it was like, I'm next. That was kind of all I was saying. That was all was running through my head was I'm next. He was only a year older than me. It was like, this is it. I've only got a year. I've got to pull my socks up, pull my finger out, and everything that I've wanted to do, everything that I would hate not doing, as sort of what Tommy and Kurt said, it was like, no regrets. You're going to hate not doing it more than you will attempting it. It was like, this is it. I've got no other choice. I mean, it makes me quite, how can I put it? Like, I want things to happen now, and I've got to remember to be patient, even though I don't have the time, even though I'm sort of like cross between be patient, but you can't be patient, be patient, but you can't be, and I'm just like, no, I have to be patient, because the world's still the world. I can't bend it to how I want it to be, otherwise I'd have achieved everything by now, when I'd be...
I would have to too, believe me. If I could bend it, I would have everything. But you live and you learn. Like I said, I tell people, I did my first website in 1994. My regrets, if I would have any regrets, are not buying all the one-word domains. Like that, that's like that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna be a billionaire right now. Like I would have been like, you know, so rich had I known then what I know now. But hey, you live and you learn. That's the most important thing. So I like that aspect of your book. I want to go over to Tommy real quick. One of the things that Michael was talking about is that whole kind of, you have to do it. You don't have any choice. I know we run into that with entrepreneurs. Like there is no, if I don't do my work, I'm still going to get paid. I'm still going to get that paycheck. It's, you know, eat or starve. Did you have that feeling? Did you go through that experience in building your business?
No, not really because, I've always had a competitive spirit. Like I've always been in sports. So I've always wanted to do things. So I'm self-motivated. Mm-hmm. So it never really was a situation where I was thinking, you know, if I don't do this, I don't have a safety net. Like I'm not going to come up here and say that like I wasn't afforded a wonderful opportunity, right? My parents their relationships with their customers helped me gain my customers.
Okay.
That, you know, kind of that said, I really like made a safe bet. Like I had customers day one because of that. So, and I've also, like I mentioned, I'm a self-motivator. So I never thought that I would never do the work. Mm-hmm. Right. It was always kind of just like, you know what? I want this. I've done all this research. I'm pretty sure that it could work out. I also had mentors that were supporting me and telling me, hey, man, you're on the right path. Just keep going. And I've never been afraid of any type of work. Like I told you, I grew up working on the back of a truck. I grew up riding on my dad's lap. So hard work was never anything foreign to me. And I knew that I would end up doing it. So I never thought that I would be in a situation where I was either going to kind of sink or swim, essentially. Mm-hmm.
I like that though. I love the whole, this must be the show about family. I don't know, but that's to me why having our own businesses and family business is so important is mm-hmm. because you're able to take those first steps and those hard steps for your children. So you have something that you can leave to them and doors that you can open for them. So yeah. I think.
If I could add one thing, Sharifa, that's a fantastic point. But what it really does, it's similar to, I like going, like, so I went to Mexico and I did zip lining and stuff like that. And you think
I would never do that.
Yeah.
Never.
But you think that you like in America, like, all right, there's zip lining, there's like these safety nets and it's like safe, but you go to Mexico and it just ain't like that. Like, like I had like anxiety for like a month after doing this, but my point is, the reason that people are able to jump out of planes and zip line and do all these crazy things, some people are just certifiable crazy, right? But other people who are kind of, not as adventurous, they do it because they see either their friends or someone do it before them, mm-hmm. right? And it gives them that courage to take that leap of faith, right? And that's how I see it. Like it's, you know, what gives us courage is people coming before us and saying, this is kind of the way to do it. And then that gives you courage to propel yourself to move forward. So I've always kind of seen it that way. And that's kind of what it worked for me. I looked at my parents and I said, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. So like, that's really kind of how I like position my mental state to kind of push through and do things, you know, every day and kind of keep it maintaining. So.
I like that. My dad would love you. He would, I'm telling you. So I have another question, but I just want to stop for a moment because it's so funny because the comments will be quiet. They'll be silent. Then all of a sudden it's like, beep, 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 beep. Everybody's here. Everybody's commenting. I want to say good morning to Jade Elizabeth. She said, very interesting conversation. There's a Whitney Roberts who says, hi, Tommy. Good to see you.
That's one of my partners that I'll share.
Okay, well, they're tuning in, supporting you. Amy Trout Hughes says, write the plan, work the plan. No one else is going to do the work for you. And it's 24/7 when you're an entrepreneur. Definitely mm-hmm. agree with you because we're out there making it happen. I want to go over to you, Kurt, real quick. Kind of the same question or the same conversation that we had with Michael and Tommy. But for you as an entrepreneur, a co-founder, a business owner, did you ever have that feeling where it's kind of sink or swim or kind of you have to make this happen?
I mean, every day.
I like that too.
Every day. I mean, there's obstacles and there's hurdles every day. And as long as you got faith in yourself, your abilities, I think, you know, any hurdle you can get over. But it's just like, it comes down to just believing in yourself and then directing your efforts accordingly. I love what Tommy said about, people before you and, you know, watching people, you know, succeed and you feeding off that. Like it's good to feed off positive energy and good energy, you know, whether it's your partners, whether it's, you know, like a mentor or someone that you've worked with in the past. You just got to keep swimming. That's actually been my motto in LA. is just keep swimming. Like, just keep swimming. You'll be okay. At the end of the day, it'll be fine.
We have to modify that for LA. It's like you're swimming with the sharks, but just keep swimming.
Yeah, just keep swimming.
Yeah, just keep swimming.
Yeah. Amy Trout Hughes says, faith makes the obstacles into opportunities. I think that is so wonderful. Kurt, where do you see Show Me Television going? What's your vision? What's your goal for it?
We just want to continue becoming a publisher, you know, with a large audience. Mm-hmm. That's our main issue right now, is just scaling our audience and just grabbing more of that market share. Mm-hmm. Obviously we're not Netflix, we're not Hulu, but we've got some good content that's on those platforms as well. So just moving forward and continuing to grow is my hope for our company.
I think that's important. I think that's wonderful. I don't believe that you have to be a Netflix or a Hulu. I believe everything is driven by demand and is driven mm-hmm. by the content. And I have several different online accounts that I either mm-hmm. open or close. And it is all based on what I want to see. Like, for mm-hmm. instance, if I've canceled my subscription to Hulu, but then 5 months later, they'll send me an email that says, this movie is coming up on Hulu. Then I may mm-hmm. get it, watch the show, cancel the subscription, keep the subscription. But it's all based on what I want to see at that moment, you know? So mm-hmm. if, you know, I know you're already doing it, but I will look for that key show, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's that, I forgot the term they call it in entertainment, the flagship show, you know, that show that you can just like, this is the
you
show
push
that,
and push that and push and push and people are going to come and watch.
Yes.
It.
Yes. Because I do that all the time. I have Netflix. I've signed up for everything, but they may not be active. I would find that flagship show and go after it. But that's just me. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Michael.
Well, I think the main thing that I want to end with, I suppose, is most of it does come down to belief. As Kurt said, you've got to have faith in yourself and trust yourself. But I think, like anything else, that's a skill. You've got to learn how to do that. It's not like the only people that are born with it are people that have people who are family members that also do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that you're going to learn from, Tommy and Kurt had business owner family, parents. They were entrepreneurs as well. So it was almost like they started emulating them, and then they took it on board and thought, let's put this to our own thing. You know, let's sort of learn how to do that for ourselves. I think that's what it is, unfortunately. You know, people that didn't have the same start as yourselves or myself, it's understanding that you can learn it. And it's weird because you're learning a feeling, you're learning an emotion that makes you act rather than not. But unfortunately, that's also true. Everything is a skill, including how you feel. It's all learnable.
I think that's beautiful. And I never thought of being an entrepreneur as a feeling. But I guess it is. That's what it feels like to be an entrepreneur, what it feels like to be in corporate America, what it feels like. Corporate America feels confining to me. That's what it feels like. It feels like there's so much, I won't say structure, because I have a lot of structure being able to do 3 shows a day, but it's just allowing me to do those shows when I want to do it, when it's the best time for me, which is why the people in LA are all mad at me, because they're like, why 8 o'clock in the morning? Like, out of all the times, why 8 a.m.? Because I'm awake. Kurt, you up? You awake with me? What do you have for the people?
I love that. I wish I could have that to say to finish off, but I won't get repetitive. Learn to pivot. With everything going on with COVID, and everything we've learned over the last couple months, is if you don't pivot with the times, then you're probably going to fall behind, and you know, it's going to be a detriment. But pivot, you know, put your efforts and your focus where you believe that it deserves to go, you know, and feel free to test, you know, if something doesn't work, that doesn't, it's not a discouragement, just learn from it and adjust and then keep going. And, you know, always keep swimming. And that's it. That's all I got.
I like that. So pivot and keep swimming. So when you swim mm-hmm. it, you might have to swim in a different direction.
Exactly.
But you keep swimming.
There might be that shark fin. You just got to turn away from the shark fin.
I like that. I like that. Just keep swimming. Keep going. I think that's wonderful. Tommy, what do you have for us?
It's really two things. Are you asking what my advice to like a entrepreneur would be, or just like people in general?
What I'm asking you is, the people are watching you. They're tuning in. We have Whitney Roberts here listening. Whatever you want them to hear you say, those powerful words that are going to change everyone's life and speak to their heart.
Okay. I'm good at that. Okay. It would be two things. One, it would be, I want to share my favorite Bible verse. I don't want to make this too religious. I'm not sure whose faith is what.
It's about you. This your moment.
Yeah. So kind of what, like the days that I feel like, you know, I kind of want to give up, and because it's inevitable. You will have days where you're not sure if you can push through and things like that, or you feel like your world's kind of falling apart. I like to look at this verse so I can kind of get my feet on the ground again. And the verse is, as my days are, so shall my strength be. Mm. Right. And that's just like, it reminds me that even like you could be at rock bottom, you could feel like, you know, you're like the ground is falling underneath of you. But you will always be able to get through and persevere through that. And I think if you start with that, you know, the days that you feel like you want to give up, you'll have enough energy to get through it. And then the days will stack up. And then a month later, you're like, okay, I got through that. I feel better. So that would be my first advice. The second one would be embrace as an entrepreneur, embrace the ability, embrace the idea of not knowing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay to not know every single detail, or to not know how you're going to, you know, move your business forward, or how you're going to create this relationship, or in Kurt, in your example, find a show that works that you can push, or get on this platform, whatever it is. Or with you, Mike, and kind of overcoming the issues that you have, it's, you know, don't worry about not knowing, you know, day by day, figure it out. Right. Don't just assume things are the way you think they are, because we have a lot of biases that we deal with, right? And you don't want to just reason towards the things that you already know and want to confirm, all right? So always keep an open mind. Always have the ability to say, you know what, maybe this isn't right. Let me find out. Talk to your customers. And I think if you continue to do that, you reduce and you mitigate the risks that you will inevitably take as becoming an entrepreneur. Because it's the person that wins in life is not the person that affirms their prior beliefs. It's the person that has the most accurate model of the world, right? Mm-hmm. The most accurate model of the market. So don't coming into it thinking that you know everything. Be willing, be humble, be willing to learn, and embrace the ability to say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that would be my advice to whoever's watching and entrepreneurs.
I think that's wonderful. And it's not just the entrepreneurs, it's just people who tune in to get some guidance, get some information, to learn from your stories. And I thought both tips that you gave were amazing. You started with God. I love that one. I always start with what gets me through the hard days is all things work together for those that love the Lord, you know, and I just remember that all, you know, so when I'm having that, the worst day, it's like, not something, all things. So I try to keep that in mind. You know, and then one of my favorite expressions I tell people is, I'm smart enough to know that I don't know, but I'm also smart enough to know that God knows. So I don't have to know everything. I just have to trust that he knows. So I had an amazing show. It was wonderful. I love meeting each of you, learning about each of you. I just want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support, but don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. I definitely appreciate you sharing the show, but please support our guests, visit their website, watch their channel, buy their book. If you're in the DC metro area, until he takes it nationwide or global, contact Hall Share, see how they can help you, but support our guests, follow them on social media. And when you follow them, when you talk to them, when you send them that first message, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. And if you are interested in being a guest or finding ways that I can support you and your business, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.